Hey, this is Len Kabasinski, and you're listening to the Cinema Psycho Show.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh, my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show with Madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Lane Wollescroft, joined by my fellow co-host, filmmaker, and husband, John Wollescroft.
You're not Brian.
Very well spotted.
This is unacceptable.
You don't want to just like hang out, you know, with your wife and like talk about a movie and like do a thing?
Why would I want to spend nearly an hour talking about a movie into a microphone and then putting it out on the internet for free?
I mean, that's what we always do. You'd just be only doing it with me.
Oh, yeah. Is it a good movie?
Good is such a strong word.
I believe we are on episode 149. Is that correct?
Oh my goodness. I think that's true.
We are one way from 150, which I don't mean to jump the gun here, but we will be going at least Facebook Live. There is some issues right now with the date that we are trying to work out, date and time, but we will be going on Facebook Live for our 150th episode. So if you follow us on Facebook, you will see the notification that we are going live. So if you want to not wait for the episode to come out, you can watch it as we record it. And I think we will be clothed, or are we doing it naked?
I'm going to be clothed, but you know, I would never yuck someone's yum. If you don't want to wear pants, handsome, you don't do it.
Right. And what's the episode on?
The episode's going to be The Psychos on Psycho.
I don't get it. What does that mean?
Well, we're going to cover the Psycho franchise because we're the Cinema Psychos and we'll be talking about the Psycho franchise.
Isn't that delightful that you say franchise with the word Psycho when that movie was just a nice standalone movie and they made five of them in a TV show?
You know, suck it up, Buttercup. Everybody's shit gets ruined, okay? But nothing is sacred.
But this is episode 149, and we are still in spooky season, so let's talk about spooky clowns.
Spooky season. Brr, brr,
brr. Yeah. So this is It Chapter 2.
Yep.
We are talking about here, you know, a little bit after its release date, but as always, we wanted to give enough time because of spoiler alerts. We are going to spoil AF this shit, so hopefully you have seen it by now. If you haven't, that's your fair warning. And also my first take here, if you liked it, you're probably going to turn it off right about now. So, Lane, I think the issue is I didn't think this movie was very good. I thought the chapter one was decent. I thought the miniseries wasn't very good. And I think it all comes back to, it's not a matter of that this property can't be translated correctly. It's that the book isn't very good.
Thank God you said that. That's like my biggest takeaway, is because I think that the source material itself, you know, we were talking about this earlier, it's one of King's longest, if not the longest. I'm not sure if this or The Stand is longer.
I think The Stand is 6,000 pages. It's longer than the Bible. Old and New Testament.
I thought this one was his longest, but I think number one, it's overly long and doesn't make a good deal of sense.
No.
Necessarily. Well, and like, I think that the concept is very interesting, and I think that the overall lesson of adults overcoming their fears, I think that's a good one. I think that that's worthy. But I feel like, you know, with an adaptation like this, you're going to run into problems. You know, has the filmmaker been faithful enough to the source material, etc.? And I think in this case, like, taking some liberties might have been all right to make a tighter storyline, you know, a better pacing. Like, I thought we got really bogged down in the second act with a lot of flashbacks, you know, that ended up being expensive, you know, for the filmmakers itself, you know. So
there was at least a structure in the first one. This one was just, I think it fell into the same problem of like Deathly Hallows 2 or Hunger Games Final Fire
Where Breather it was, like, 2 or whatever the hell it's called.
They take these two acts, and what they do is the first one feels like an actual movie, and then the second one is just nonstop action and, you know, tense scene, racing to the finish line. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When maybe it should have been better if you just put it into, you know, one unit. Now, a 1,400 page book that's all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand you can't put that into one movie. Hell, it barely works as two. I think that, you know, we are living in a world now where it might have been a better miniseries.
Oh, that'd have been cool.
You know, and back in the day, like with Stephen King, it was, you know, oh, the miniseries were these things made for TV. Like the first It was, and they were on network television with no money, and they were garbage. But, you know, I think the I think like Netflix or somebody has The Stand, you know, and it's going to be
I mean, they're working
12
on
to 15 episodes or something along those, just to really flesh it out and give it its due process. And the thing is, you would think, oh, 6 hours would be enough to tell the story, but it's 1,400 pages from a madman. It's just, it isn't enough, because the second chapter of this is just so rushed, and it's just so nonstop bad CGI, you know, monster effect after another after another, where it's all just leading to inevitable end, which we'll get to how the ending just falls apart. But but to get back to Stephen King, like, this novel didn't really work, but
he
was...
It doesn't make a lot of sense. It really doesn't.
But he was Stephen, you know, fucking King at that point. And
he's still Stephen fucking King. I mean, the dude is awesome.
Right, but, I'm not shitting on him. I mean, Stand By Me, you know, Schindler's List, Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, Misery. Like, the guy is, you know, made a lot of great works. I'm not just talking about the films. The books they were based on were fantastic. I've read a lot of his works, and he has made me very happy, but he's also very much disappointed me. And it was one of those situations, it being the book. Let's not play that who's on first.
I think that's like an interesting kind of observation, because like he has probably created as much crap as genius. Is that fair?
I would say it's probably 65 to 70% crap and 30% genius.
So, but that's kind of inspiring.
But he's written like 300,000 books.
So dear listeners, if you're listening to this now and you have an idea, just go do it. Just go fucking do the thing, because maybe it'll be brilliant. But if you don't do the thing, you won't know. Be like Stephen King. Don't be afraid to make garbage.
Unless it's a 1,400-page book about a clown from space who comes and goes beep beep all the time. And then there's
still
a little
kid
gangbang.
Still do it. Anyway.
Yeah.
So a couple interesting like bullet points, I think, you know, about the film itself. The first one made stupid money. It made $700 million.
And how much of that? I think there's two things of why this film was successful.
The first one, you mean?
Yeah. People are obsessed with clowns. Like, ooh, scary clowns.
Right.
That's why he appears so much in the clown form than he does in the book.
And let's be real, Pennywise is terrifying.
A little too terrifying, because in the, you know, in the miniseries at least, it seemed like somebody might actually approach that clown if they were a little kid. And this one, no, he's a demon. But
he kind of looks like a possum, just too many sharp teeth.
But in also, it's the 30-year rule. It's playing off of the 80s, you know, the Stranger Things, the new American Horror Story is taking place in the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, right now we're still in that whole 80s nostalgia phase. And I think a lot of people saw it because like, oh, cool, it takes place in the 80s. I grew up in the
80s. I was a kid in the 80s. Yeah.
I read at least 100 pages of that book.
Right.
But yeah, so I think those are the two biggest factors of the success of this film.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting. You know, this, like I said, this made stupid money, $700 million. Budget was only $35 million. I thought that was pretty
surprisingly low.
Yeah, it is surprisingly low. So
maybe
that's
why the effects sucked in both movies.
Well, that's why I made so much money, I think, because the budget wasn't that big of a deal. Now, they doubled the budget for the second, $79 million. And then the second
it's one, that sweet Bill Hader money.
And the second one, it made $386 million. So it still made a pretty penny for both of them.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, I would say it was considered probably a financial success.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, this isn't was it financially successful podcast. You know, it's
But I think it's interesting to see, like, you know, these movies had a lot going on, but they made money. People went to see them. So and speaking of CGI, I thought it was super interesting that for all the flashback scenes, you know, with Finn Wolfhard and the younger cast of the Losers Club, they had to use the digital de-aging on the kids because they had grown so much in the 2 years between movies.
And
it's just funny to think of that, you know?
And so many people said they noticed it. I didn't, but I also, you know, didn't care. You know,
it looked pretty bad on Finn Wolfhard. I thought they made his face really soft.
But at the same time, would you want him to look nothing like? Because I think in the future the idea is that I want to say rent, like you go to a video store, but you know you would digitally watch both of these back to back, you know, not a year or two separated like we had to when they came out in the theater here, and you would be like, hey, wait a minute, those, you know, he doesn't look like he did in the first one, and it's supposed to be the exact same day as the first film.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying that's a problem. I just think it's interesting that the kids aged so much that they had to change it, because the one kid, I apologize, he has three names, as so many actors do. But the one kid who, he's like the one that's the glow up, like he ended up being like super fit and like real successful and stuff.
Ben.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Jeremy Ray Tyler, or Taylor. I told you he had three names.
Is that the kid's name or the adult's name?
No, that's the kid's name. So Jeremy Ray Taylor, he grew 9 inches between the two movies. 9 freaking inches. When's the last time? I mean, I don't even remember when I stopped growing. That's mind blowing.
Well, the shame with that too is that his character is all based on that he's like a fat little kid.
Yeah,
that's literally, so if he grew 9 inches, he's probably skinny now. He grew into his body.
Yeah,
well, that's a problem.
Well, they had to like shoot around it, you know, and they had to do things, I guess, in the, you know, in the makeup trailer, like, you know, pluck him and like shave things so he didn't look like, you know, a teen, you know.
So with pluck and shave thing. So when you say he grew 9 inches, what are we talking about?
Bro, what? His eyebrows. Oh. God. Such a perv. I like how you're no better behaved when it's just the two of us. Like, definitely not like a romantic recording of the Cinema Psycho show. It's just John being John.
How dare you? How dare you? Speaking of how dare you, this film has a hate crime to start the film.
Oh,
that goes nowhere.
Hated this. I cannot explain to you how much I hated this.
Well, may I lead?
Please do.
As a not gay man, let me lead.
Yes, but, let's all listen to the hetero white man
instead of the hetero white female. Anyways, so the film opens with apparently. This episode will be ending in divorce. No, at the beginning of this movie, starts with a hate crime, and it's right from the book. So I know that the filmmakers put it in the movie so that people that read the book and go, oh, that's from the book. I know that from the book. You know, so they can say, you know, we're more like pure to the original source material than the, you know, made for TV movie was, you know. And the problem is in the book, because it's 1,400 pages, there's like 3 or 4 chapters dedicated to them catching the people that committed the hate crime against the two gay men, and that they go on trial, and it's all about, the whole point of it in the book was to show the underbelly of Derry's police system, their justice system, etc. And also that the clown, it, can attack, what will attack, I should say, adults as well as children. In the movie, because you got to get things rolling, it's just the hate crime. The bigots throw the gay man over the bridge into the water. He is drowning. You know, he's finally getting to shore. And then there's Pennywise, who's offering the handout. And it was a very well shot, you know, because the water's hitting the lens and you can see Pennywise holding out his hand. And he kills this young man. So not only was it, oh, you got attacked for no reason other than who you were from birth, you're also dead now, and that's where we're going to leave it for the rest of the movie. When you're translating that and you're not showing the repercussions of it, or you need to take that out, then you take it out of the movie because it just shows that hate crimes pay.
Yeah, and do I need to see another homophobic, you know, violence against, you know, a minority group? No, I don't.
Well, you know that Stephen King like just hates small towns and things like they're all just religious bigots and racists, and
that
permeates through all of his work. So I think, you know, he's like, oh, this is the true underbelly of Derry. They're all a bunch of homophobic, racist, sexist monsters in this town. You know, that's small town America for you.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, like, we don't need to see these images. There's a point at which this just becomes more hurtful than anything else. Like, it just becomes kind of a perpetuating of the stereotype, but to still see the imagery, it doesn't help anybody. It normalizes it and exposes people to it, and people get numb to it. You know, like, we didn't need to see this scene, because especially because there's no other reason in the whole deal. I mean, we could have had an opening scene where Pennywise just, like, killed some motorists, or, like, just murdered someone.
Or killed a small kid like they opened the miniseries on TV.
Well, I mean, if you want to prove that he can kill adults too, okay, fine. That's what I'm saying. Like, if that's the point. But, like, I 100% didn't need that scene. And I think it's something that's damaging. And you know, filmmaking really is about being responsible. And responsible for the story. And not just throwing in violent content just to have it there.
I don't know if I 100% agree with you exactly on that point, but I feel that that's a bigger discussion for
another episode.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously this leads to Ben seeing that, you know, that Pennywise is back, and then he needs to get some squad goals, needs to get the crew back to Derry, Maine, as he's the only one that stayed behind. And it really
does. Wait, was Ben the one that stayed behind?
Mike. Sorry, I'm gonna probably do this the whole episode. I'm like Jim Ross with wrestling. Whenever Edge and Christian were in the ring together, and he could never get them separated.
Hey, there's your wrestling.
Yeah, there's my wrestling. My one reference for the episode. Yay. But yeah, no, sorry, Mike.
Yeah, because Mike's the one that stayed in town. Yeah.
But here's the problem: is that in the book and the miniseries, he's the one who's fascinated by the history and researches that, and he stays behind because
he works in the library, so it makes sense.
But in the chapter one, if you remember, it was the little fat kid who is obsessed with the history and everything, making the Mike Hamlin character completely useless. And the fact that he stays behind is just because he was the most meaningless character, I guess.
I guess. I'm not 100% comfortable with you calling him the little fat kid.
I didn't say little. I just said fat kid. But that's all Stephen King describes him as, and that's his whole character thing, is he grows up to be hot and not fat anymore.
4 out of 10, don't love it.
Okay. but, you know, he starts regrouping everybody, and I feel they did a good job at this. You know, kind of getting through it quickly, but not undermining it. You know, Bill Hader is funny because he goes out and, you know, completely throws up, but he has to go out and do his set, and he goes to start to do his bits, and he can't remember them because he's just traumatized by, you know, what he's heard.
Dude, Bill Hader in this, what a cast. Like, I really thought there were some strong performances, and I loved seeing Bill Hader in something like this. You know, I thought he was really good, and actually, Finn Wolfhard's the one that got him in the film because he did an interview in, like, 2017. Well, who would you want to have play adult you? And he was like, oh, Bill Hader. And all of a sudden, then the directors wanted to talk to Bill Hader and got him the gig. So
that's a nice, like, understanding of who you are and what you look like. And if they asked me, I would have been like, Gosling, Ryan Gosling, of course. He needs to work out a little, though, if he's going to be me, you know?
But it was just so cool because I can't remember her name, but the girl who played Beverly, I think her first name in real life is Sophie, but she wanted Jessica Chastain to play her too, and she did.
Yeah, and
it's really cool.
The casting was pretty damn good in this. Yeah. And I don't mean to be rude, but in the miniseries, the guy that played Bill, the adult Bill, like, was so goofy looking. He had the long ponytail and the grandpa glasses and the giant mole on his face. And if that's a real mole, then I apologize for being rude to that man and his mole. But, like,
you're going after everybody.
But he was, like, also, like, 100 pounds and just, like, just this little bitch. I don't know.
Whoa, let's not say that either.
But this one, they got, you know, Chuck Xavier to play Bill, and I thought that was pretty good casting.
I love James McAvoy. I would just watch him sitting on a folding chair. He's so good.
Yeah, and he's the only good thing in Glass, so, or not Glass, yeah, is that
in
it?
Glass.
Yeah, even though the movie's not really about Samuel.
And Split.
Yeah. But yeah, he can do anything. He was even semi-decent in The Dark Phoenix. But, so yeah, it's good casting, top to bottom. And, you know, they all, not only are they all good actors, but they do look like the kids.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The one that played Eddie as an adult, like, looks just like the kid. I would have thought it was his dad. Like, when they did Straight Outta Compton, the guy that played Ice-T in the movie was Ice-T's actual son.
Oh.
So I was like, you know, oh, well, of course, you know, I mean, he sounds like him, looks like him, perfect casting. Like, I would have sworn that the Eddie kid and the Eddie adult were family members.
Oh, yeah. They did that in Riverdale, too. Hiram Lodge, Kelly Ripa's husband, Mark Consuelos, is that it?
Anybody? Oh, wait, no, I forgot. We're just sitting here.
But anyway, his son, like their son played young him on Riverdale. It was incredible. I mean, just it was his face.
I mean, that doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. Like sometimes you'll see like some lady walking down the street with like curly hair and big glasses and, you know, and then you'll see this little daughter with curly hair. And like they are literally just twins of each other.
Oh, yeah. You know? And that's got to be weird as a parent to be like, oh, cool. That's just my face chilling there. As a producer, though, the producer in me just loves that where it's like, oh my God, they have the same face. Like I would, that 100 times out of 100 times would make me so happy.
But then obviously they meet at the Chinese restaurant, the infamous Chinese restaurant. They all get back together. And I thought it was weird that, you know, they point out, which is something from the book that they all kind of forgot about. Like once you leave Derry, you don't remember the clown anymore. And
I guess, I mean,
how like, he attacked you. Like, why is that necessary? Considering that, like, when they all were called, they did kind of remember, you know?
Isn't that kind of a comment on trauma, though?
Yeah.
The brain protects itself from trauma.
But the film is also implying that, like, there's something else, some kind of more magical thing happening that causes you to not remember. Because I think the idea is if you survive the clown, he doesn't want you coming back to possibly kill him.
Well, Jesus Christo, my friend, like by the end of the movie, we're going to be fighting some serious space shit. So if this is the problem you have with the movie, I don't know what to tell you. I can't help you.
But, you know, we have our characters. You know, Bill is a successful writer who nobody thinks can finish a book. Can't imagine where Stephen King got that source material from. Got Jessica Chastain, who continued on her cycle of abuse. You know, Eddie is, this time around, Eddie doesn't continue to live with his mom. He lives with a woman who looks just like his mom, and he calls mom.
That was creepy. And like,
that's from the book.
Yeah, and like, what, Munchausen's by proxy, we're thinking, yes?
I don't think it's inferred that she kept him sick. I think it's that she coddled him to an excessive and disturbing amount. Like, oh, you've been outside for 3 hours today. You have to sleep now for 2 days. Like, she wasn't actively making him sick for her own mental illness. Just overly coddling in, like, a weird way. Like, you can't go out. You can't do anything without your mom. Or if you do go outside, like, you need mom to take care of you. And I'm the only one you can trust and to take care of you, blah, blah, blah.
That's
blah, blah.
Fair.
And that's why he has the fake asthma. She wants it. I guess that could be considered. But she's not poisoning him. She's just convincing him he has a disease. And, you know, it's just like water in his inhaler. But, you know, and it's kind of forced in the movie because he goes, I love you, mom, when he's talking to his wife. And she goes, what did you say? Because I'm sure, you know, well, I'm not sure. In the book, they say that, like, he married a woman just like his mom, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, and then we have the architect who is now like a smoke show, just like in the other ones.
What?
And he's in bare feet, which means, you know, he's a genius because he's in bare feet. And he's on a web conference and he just dismisses what everybody else says and then gets off the call before the meeting's over because he's a genius.
Yeah, because that's what respected professionals do. They act like children.
Well, I think they probably thought, okay, let's do like a Steve Jobs meets Mark Zuckerberg kind of thing.
Definite Zuckerberg.
You know, yeah. But yeah, so we got the gangs all here, and obviously, I think we just mentioned everybody. What it was, Mike, Bill, Eddie's back. We mentioned how good Bill Hader was with that. And then we have that scene, like in the miniseries, where everything goes haywire at the Chinese restaurant, and then everybody wants to leave, which is understandable to get out of there. But in Bev, because the plot needs her to, she saw the deadlights, which is supposed to make you crazy, in the first film, and she says, I saw us all die, and if we leave, then we're all gonna die and shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, maybe we'll stay, because Bev and the deadlights saw the future, or whatever. And I was like, wait, what? This film's starting to lose it. This is what drives me nuts about this film, the miniseries, the book, what have you, the future, like, 15 years from now when they remake it again. There's too many things that aren't spelled out. The rules aren't laid out. All the things about Derry, about the alien creature that has taken this form mostly of a clown, especially if it's in Hollywood, when they say, you know, make him a clown even when he's not in the book, because scary clowns equal butts and seats, is that there's just not enough rules. And there weren't in the book, because I don't mean this as dismissively as possible, but it was an out of control, narcissistic pulp writer, B-plus writer, who was on a ton of cocaine and wrote a 1400 page book. He didn't edit.
Well, who would be offended by that, John?
He just. I'm not trying to minimize like drug addiction, but you know,
right? No, I mean, but he's been pretty candid about it, and he talks about it, you know, himself. So,
but you know, the book just has too many problems, and I think that I hate to say this, but I think a lot of people just overlook how the mythology doesn't completely make sense. There's not an understanding of all the rules of the clown. There's not enough rules of what happens when you leave. There's not enough rules of how you fight him, because they just, ooh, scary clown, scary images. You know,
yeah, and I think like sometimes like
the I got symbol, scared and that was good enough for me.
Well, like the symbol of something becomes more powerful than the thing itself sometimes, you know. People just want to see Pennywise. You know what I mean? Like they don't necessarily care about anything else.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the Jason Voorhees rule. Like, the thing is, like, oh, aren't all those, you know, Friday the 13th movies the same, and aren't they all just like trite, you know, and fill in the blanks and it's the same murders each time? It's like, yeah, but the people go, they just want to see a guy in a hockey mask kill a bitch in the shower. You know, it's
can we not say kill a bitch?
Okay. Man bitch in the shower. Oh, 21st century. but and I think that a lot of people wanted to see that with this film. And because, you know, we have where Mike is showing Bill the history of the clown and how to kill him by forcing him to take drugs against his will.
Yeah.
And he takes a spirit vision.
That wasn't great.
Taking hallucinogenics, like, you can't force somebody to have the same, like, trip that you had.
It's shared hallucinations? Nothing.
Yeah. And Stephen King loves using Indians. That's probably that's not okay. Native Americans as a cop-out.
I was just about to say that. It is 100% not okay for this to be a thing. Like, I can't believe in the year of our Lord.
I was saying it wasn't okay for me to say Indians.
2019. I don't think using the Native American thing as a scapegoat, like, I don't think that that's okay. I mean, like, I'm sure it wasn't researched. And, you know, it just seems like kind of crass when, you know, Native peoples have so many struggles in our country and, like, are underrepresented and, you know, in very impoverished areas. Like, just to take mythology that, you know, you force upon their culture. I mean, that's not right.
Well,
didn't like it.
Well, let's see. The Shining, Thinner, It, like, those are just three, like, a name off the top of my head where he uses the Native American get out of jail free card. Because Pet Cemetery. Yeah, there you go. That's one of the most obvious ones. I don't know how that one skipped my mind.
I don't know. I feel like in this modern era, I don't know why that's still a thing now. Again, like, just because Stephen King didn't edit doesn't mean the filmmakers couldn't have.
No. Well, I mean, they had to make a lot of jumps and things, because this film, unlike the first one, which I will say at least had a normal structure of a movie, and everybody always says, no matter what it is, the book, the miniseries, or this, which, I mean, I wonder how many times I've said those three in that order now, is that the part with the kids is the best part, and the other parts suck. You know, and this movie just seemed like you said, it was a race to the finish line, and there's very little structure. There's very little character development that isn't in conjunction with continuing the plot along in this one, because they have to put basically the back 800 pages of a book into a 2-hour and 45-minute movie. And I could see how some people could have thought this movie was kind of long. I thought at least the pace of it was all right. I couldn't get invested in it because of the structure and the way they did it. But I didn't think the film was over long at 2 hours and 48 minutes. If anything, I thought they could have even gone longer, maybe even 3 hours.
Oh my
and 15
God.
Minutes.
I checked my watch like twice. No thanks.
Okay. Well, I know, but I don't really think you cared for this one or the first one or the miniseries or anything.
Listen.
And I don't think you're going to be reading the book on my bookshelf anytime
maybe
soon.
I'm just not an It fan. Okay. But, you know, there is something interesting about the through line of the story, though. You know, adults are forced to face childhood trauma, which I'm not sure if it's real trauma, I'm not sure I'm a big fan, but I thought it was kind of interesting that they each needed to get an artifact. They had to get something from the past.
They had to get the Horcruxes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of feel that. They had to each get their Horcrux to defeat Pennywise. I thought that was interesting.
What if they got the wrong one? Because here's the thing about drop storylines in this movie. Bill Hader's character is... It's more than hinted that he's a closeted homosexual.
Well, no, I mean, because, like, there's, like, initials, remember? There's, like, a whole thing. That's not hinted at all.
Oh, well, it just doesn't feel like it pays off unless
the... Wasn't it his and Eddie's initials at the end carved into the thing?
Yeah, but here's my take on it. Maybe I'm just being horribly naive.
Okay.
Eddie, obviously, spoiler alert country, dies at the end of this, and I thought it was his way of honoring him because I didn't think his crying at the water, you know, at the end of the movie was because he was in love with Eddie the whole time. I think it was because he's been so closed off and everything was a joke to him that he's never really showed true emotion, and he breaks down and he shows vulnerability in a way that Richie never has before.
Interesting.
That's kind of how I took it. Like, I'm not saying that he's not gay, because the movie, God, they were subtle as an anvil that he was closeted gay, but I didn't think that he was in love with Eddie from the movie. But a lot of people on the internet sure are thinking that they were, or at least that on Richie's part, he was in love with Eddie.
I see.
But yeah, so the movie was implied that way. Maybe I'm just missing lead anvils that fell on my head, and I was like, what was that? Or was that a raindrop? And, you know, maybe I just didn't get it. It looks like you're looking up a couple of notes now, so let me know.
I'm just kind of curious about it now. Yeah. So,
because what do you think? Did he love Eddie? Was he in love with Eddie?
I thought he was. Yeah.
But the weird thing is that in the book and the miniseries, it was inferred that his best friend was, and now I can't remember his name, the Boy Scout character. What the heck is this? The one that kills himself before coming back to fight.
Stanley?
Stanley. Thank you. God, there's like...
The names are seven killing of them. You.
Yeah. And I thought if they were so close, wouldn't that be the guy he was in love with? And I hate to fall into stereotypes, but they were like polar opposites, and the whole opposites attract kind of thing. Like, wouldn't you have hoped that that would have been his boyfriend and not Eddie, who was just another guy?
Well, I mean, I got the impression that Eddie and Richie were best friends.
Now, it's always been inferred that Richie and Stanley were best friends.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. So that's why I thought it was kind of a drop thing, because I thought if anything, he would have been in love with Stanley, and he kind of just brushes off the fact that Stanley's dead. You know, it's like, oh, shit, I guess Stanley ain't making it.
Yeah, which is interesting because that pays off at the end, too, Stanley's death.
Yeah. With the letters. Well, we need to talk about that, but we'll get there. But talking about drop storylines as well, and this is every version of this, because I'm getting tired of saying the three over and over again, is that they let the bully out of jail, who kind of took the fall for all the murders 30-some years ago, out of the mental institution. It breaks him out, you know, using magical powers and stuff. So that he, this, you know, psycho guy 30-some years later can kill the Losers Club, our heroes in the film. And I don't know the limits of its powers, because why can't he just kill them himself? Why doesn't this all-powerful being just kill these giant threats to him that he apparently sees as a threat, because he got this guy out to, like, kill them, and then he fails horribly because he's a nearly elderly, like, insane asylum maniac? Like, when can he kill and when can he can't? Because I thought, oh, rewatching the It Chapter One, I thought, oh, well, he can only kill if the people are truly terrified, or like, but there's a scene where one of the bullies goes down to the sewers chasing the kids, and he just turns a corner and it's right there and just eats him instantly.
Maybe he was hungry?
But in this one, you know, because I guess the producers, the little girl that gets killed, I think the producers just said, we haven't had enough clown killing people in a while. So when the little girl goes under the bleachers at the baseball game, you know, and she's talking to Pennywise, and, you know, he does that thing where, you know, He's like, you didn't count to three. And he has that like look on his face like somebody's about to sneeze and fart at the same time and then eat their face.
Way to ruin the killer clown, John.
But the thing is, she wasn't scared. She actually thought he was fun. So if he can just kill at will, why don't you just teleport to where these adults are in their hotel and just eat their face?
Damn it, John. What? Then we wouldn't have a movie.
Oh. But by the way, I was so excited when they violently murdered that little girl and the other boy later in the film. I was like, thank you for showing child murder in this film, for having the guts to show violent child death.
I had a feeling you'd be a fan.
They did not hesitate with that. But
that's upsetting.
But yeah, so like the guy breaks out of the insane asylum and he goes to attack Eddie and he stabs Eddie in the face. He stabs him in the cheek and Eddie's just kind of like, oh, shit. Like, that's his whole reaction and just walks away into the shower from the bully. And the bully goes to, like, get near him and he stabs the bully through the shower. And if I'm remembering this correctly, and then he dies shortly thereafter, the bully character. And that's it. Like, what was the point of any of that?
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
It plays out more in the book. But once again, if you're not translating this as a 15 to 18 hour miniseries, don't put that in your movie. It was completely pointless. And if you like never read the book or knew anything about it, you'd be like, why was that even in there?
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like they were trying to do service to the book, but it just really bogged the movie down, honestly.
Yeah. And eventually, yeah, they all get their horcruxes and then we get jump scare after jump scare, or not even jump scare, but just like horrible CGI. Scenes. And I felt that the filmmaker really wanted to create images that were not typical. That, like, when you, the idea is that when you saw them, something was off. Like bad stop motion. Like, you're like,
right.
Oh, that movement isn't right, you know, because it's frame by frame. Like, that's so creepy, even if some stop motion is not meant to be creepy.
Yeah. No, but, I agree.
But I think he wanted to create newish kind of effects that were going to stick with you and give you nightmares. But what it ended up looking was just, like, really crappy special effects. And non-fucking-stop special effects. And the screening I went to, because we went to two different ones, the scene where Beverly is in her old house and the old lady is in there and she's like looking at some stuff on the wall and the old lady like walks off in the background, but she walks all goofy because she's really the clown. Like, it's supposed to be scary, but in my movie theater, people laughed.
Oh my God, really?
And then when she came charging at Bev and she was like 11 feet tall. And by the way, these apartments in the slums have really high ceilings.
Listen, we lived in an apartment for like 6 years and it had really high ceilings.
And like, they were laughing at that and like, this isn't working, guys.
You know? I will say the woman that played the old lady, the freezes, she did those herself. Like, the actress just was able to freeze like that.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, there is points where she just stops talking because I'm sure the clown isn't just knowing how to properly be a human being.
Right. Yeah.
Except when he is.
Yeah, I saw an interview with Jessica Chastain and she said that the lady was crazy. She was just like down for anything and was like really good.
Yeah. But, you know, and eventually it leads to everybody having their arc, blah, yada, 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 blah, yada. Blah, blah,
ooh,
blah, blah, blah.
The Jessica Chastain blood scene.
Yeah.
4,000 gallons of blood, enough to fill an above ground pool. Yeah. It's the bloodiest scene in horror movie history.
Oh, thank you for that little fact.
Anytime.
But then we find out that, you know, Bill was pretending to be sick when Georgie died, and he has to confront that and kill the image of Georgie. And I was like, okay, did he have to pretend to be sick? Couldn't he have just been sick when he still have been riddled with guilt, even if he wasn't actually sick? And it seemed like it just, oh, this is a forced arc. We have to give something here.
There's something worse about faking sick and your brother dying on your watch, though, than actually being sick. Because
it was raining outside. He didn't want to go out. The kid wanted to go play boat. He can go play by himself. I don't know. It's not that big a deal. Normally, there aren't clowns in the sewer drain.
You would think that wouldn't be a widespread problem, but here we are.
But eventually, we get to the showdown in the sewers, and in the novel, he comes into form, like his true form, like as far as we can understand, it looks like a giant spider in the description.
Oh my God. Oh, now, the spider.
In the book, it says that like the best thing they could fathom with their human minds was a spider, because the idea is that in his true form, in his deadlight form, like our human minds can't handle him. That's why he can take many, many, many forms. And speaking of hilarious scenes that I shouldn't have been laughing at, the Paul Bunyan scene when he's attacking Richie, dude, the giant Paul Bunyan. I was like, this fucking is hilarious,
dude. Stephen King like asked for that scene. He like he wanted them to add it because apparently he's obsessed with fucking Paul Bunyan.
Did he also ask for his cameo in the movie where he talks about how the writer character can't end his books and we're supposed to go yakety schmackety?
What, in the pawn shop?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But.
No, he didn't ask for that one, but he did ask for the buns, the bunion.
Wait, James McAvoy? Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, I like where you took that.
But yeah, we get to, you know, the spider is the closest thing they can represent. And then in the miniseries, it's just this god-awful nightmare stop motion thing that looks like crap and is like 8 feet tall at the most. And they just kind of like push it over. Mm-hmm. In this one, the producer said, okay, spooky clowns equals money. So what if it's a giant spider, but with a clown face?
I mean, that was
It was so stupid.
I was genuinely worried that this movie was going to scare me before I went to see it. I was actually worried. Yeah. Don't know why I was worried. It was fine.
Well, I know that some people, you know, I'm not, you know, are scared by scary imagery. But for me, like, for anything to be scary, it has to be, like, well-constructed. I have to care about the characters, care about the story. For anything to actually be scary, like, right. Just frightening imagery for the sake of it doesn't scare me. And that's, to me, what this film was. Like, oh, a spooky thing attacking one of our characters. Spooky, spooky. And then go to another character who seems safe for 10 minutes. And, oh, no, a spooky thing jumping out of them. But, you know, eventually they realize that they can use the power of imagination to defeat it.
Yep.
And I'm not being sarcastic here. They realize that, like, you know, Bev hands Eddie a spear. She says, this is like a monster killer. You know, this, mm-hmm. you can use this to kill monsters. And he's like, okay, you're just saying mm-hmm. that to kind of like okay. condescendingly say that. So I'm not like just a fucking mess anymore. And he throws it at Pennywise, who, by the way, just used the deadlights on Richie, and then Richie's fine.
Doesn't, yeah, right.
Doesn't care.
That really annoyed me.
But, you know, it really hurts him. And they realize, okay, what he can do is he can manipulate our minds to scare us. Like, and that power can be reversed. And we can break him down using the same power is what I've kind of gathered from
so
what
really,
they do.
So, really, instead of, like, running around this whole time, they could have just been watching some Bob Ross reruns, unlocked the power of their imaginations, and been fine.
Well, yeah, no, the fact that they're just like, you're just a douchebag clown. You got an ugly face, and, like, you're not really scary, and clowns are dumb and not funny, and they're just
better start, living through bullying.
Yeah, and the whole movie teaches you that bullying is the answer. Like, that'll solve all of your issues, kids. That if somebody is bullying you, get as many of your friends together as possible and just beat that person emotionally into the ground till they're so small you can metaphorically rip their fucking heart out.
Perfect. Nailed it.
And this is, once again, not to beat a dead horse, but this is the problem with a book by a coked out madman who didn't know the ending when he started writing the book. And Stephen King will happily admit that he sits down at the typewriter and types like a fucking maniac, you know, 100 pages a day. And just that's the book when it's done. He doesn't know where he's going. Like, there was somebody who had cancer and they were a big fan of the, you know, the gunslinger. What is that? That series of books. It starts with the gunslinger. They try to make a movie series out of it recently with
Dark Tower.
Yeah. And she said, like, look, I'm dying. I want to know how the Dark Tower ends. I won't tell anybody, but please, I won't be around when the last book comes out. And he says, honestly, I'm not trying to avoid you. I don't know how it ends.
Oh my God. He better have fucking made something up before she died. Poor thing. That's horrible.
But it's just, you know, proof that he doesn't know exactly where he's going most of the times. And that's why, yeah, like, his endings are such trash, because he gets there and he's like, oh shit. You know, and this is the best thing, because this isn't exactly what happens by a long shot in the book. And this is the best thing these filmmakers could do to try to make sense of it and give us an ending that kind of made sense, even though it doesn't really, and promotes bullying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, not a big fan.
It's just a mess. And it's a shame that they beat him with weapons in the first movie and they didn't just mock him a little bit more and break him down. And then they wouldn't have to come back as adults.
Yeah, they could have just stayed away from dairy the whole time. Would have been great.
But, you know, then the movie wraps up and everybody's kind of going their own ways. And they all get a letter from Stanley, who's like, yeah, so, hey, guys, I knew that, like, when I heard that the clown was back, that, like, I would be too weak to help you. So I kind of offed myself so that you guys could succeed. Because if I was there, I would have mucked it all up and ruined it. So you're welcome. Which this movie is implying that suicide is okay.
Or that it's a solution to a problem.
Yeah. And so this movie is pro-bullying, pro-suicide.
I feel like it's pro-cocaine now because you've mentioned it so many times.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And by the way, suicide, not okay. If you're hurting, please reach out to somebody. Your life matters. Like, not a solution.
And if you're hurting, skip this movie because it's not, it does not send the best message.
Sure doesn't.
And I will say this. This was probably the cleanest adaptation. I mean, both films.
Right,
Of this material that you could have gotten. And as great as Stephen King is, I think that, and, you know, you hear, oh, this is the scariest movie because for some reason people think that, or scariest book because people are for some reason so terrified of clowns. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. I don't like clowns. Fuck it.
But, you know, the people need to realize that it doesn't matter how many adaptations we get. It's still going to be a mess unless somebody
literally just
reimagines it.
Can we be done and not make any more? That would be great.
You know, this is why our audience doesn't like you. You're so negative.
This is why they don't care for you. I can't remember the last time you were like, this was a good movie. I can't wait for our Star Wars review when you just like shit all over the floor like a mouse.
Well, the Fall of Skywalker or whatever the fuck it's called. So yeah, I mean, I figured that if you listen to the spoiler review, you've probably either seen it or just are listening to us and don't really care about the movie, just want to hear what we had to say. In that case, thank you. but I would, if you haven't, I would not recommend it unless you need some closure because you saw chapter one and you just want to know how it went. But yeah. It's just kind of a convoluted mess, and I didn't overly care for it. I didn't think it was terrible. I think I gave it like 6 out of 10, but
yeah,
you know, so it wasn't god awful, but it wasn't very good either. So, and Leah, let's put it to bed, and let's put this episode to bed.
Oh, it wasn't a transition, yeah, but it was like a nice wrap up. I enjoyed.
And do you have any like last minute thoughts on it? And like, you know, I know you don't usually like to give a number or a grade or anything like that. But
I usually don't. I guess it's just one of those things where I could have seen the story being better in like different contexts, but I just think that it was a little clumsy in its execution. You know, if it was gonna do this story, being as scary visually as possible would have been really important, and since it wasn't, you know, it just kind of failed.
Well, they tried. I mean, they desperately tried. They just didn't succeed.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it's true. So.
Yeah, I mean, the rock star age of It is now gone again, and I don't know, maybe we'll see it again in 5 years or something like that. But
well, I'll tell you what, I'd love to see this cast in something else.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just like the actual It. Like, it goes into hibernation for so many years, and then it comes back, and it's ready to feed again off of our wallets.
Agreed.
But I feel in 10 years it's going to be, like, Netflix will be bankrupt by then, but whatever that is, like, mm-hmm, Disney Plus will buy It, and they'll make a, you know, mini series of it, and it'll be 8 chapters, and it'll be like, the first two were about the kids were good, but the other 6 were terrible.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense.
History always repeats itself, my friend. So we missed Brian this week, but hopefully you guys enjoyed our thoughts on It Chapter 2. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or a question for us, contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. Make sure to subscribe, give us a like, give us a review on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and be sure to catch our new episode every time.
Beep, beep, Lynn.
epithet.